This is Vatican Radio and I am Lydia O'Kane. South Korea and the United States were on high alert for a North Korean missile launch on Thursday. North Korea has stationed as many as 5 medium-range missiles on its east coast, which analysts say could be in readiness for a test launch that would demonstrate its ability to hit US bases on Guam. As tensions continue, G8 foreign ministers from the United States, Britain, France, Germany, Italy, Japan, Canada and Russia were gathering in London to discuss the crisis. I spoke with senior consulting fellow at the London-based International Affairs Institute Chatham House, Dr. John Svensson-Wright, who's based in South Korea. What kind of capabilities does North Korea actually have to launch any kind of a major attack?
Well, if we're talking about missiles, North Korea has undoubtedly the capability with its short-range ballistic missiles to strike at Seoul. Anything beyond that in terms of the ability to deliver a warhead against a neighboring country is really very much questionable. The missile that is being talked about as a possible test missile in the next hours or days it has a range of about 3,000 to 4,000 miles, which would allow it to hit Japan and possibly places in Guam. That presumes that this is a missile on which the North Koreans could place a warhead. Their ability to marry their medium-range ballistic missile technology and their warheads, whether nuclear or conventional, is, I think, fair to say, untested. And for that reason, we shouldn't exaggerate risk posed by this machine. Where North Korea does undoubtedly have real capabilities, then its basic conventional forces arrayed on the Korean Peninsula. And as we know, judging from last 3 nuclear tests, 2006, 2009, and most recently this year in February, Korea claims to be a de facto nuclear state, and most analysts assume that it has enough fissile material to produce anywhere between 4 and as many as 12 crude nuclear devices. Fundamental to this calculation is whether the North is really in a position to use those capabilities to actually threaten its neighbors. There, I think we're in the realm of assessing tensions. Most observers would argue that those, given the retaliatory capabilities of the United States and South Korea, that a formal attack on any of its neighbors, South Korea and Japan, invite swift and instant retaliation from allies, and therefore the likelihood of that taking place is, I would argue, very low.
Just regarding Kim Jong-un himself, I mean, obviously we've heard a lot of rhetoric from North Korea in the past, Kim Jong-un's father, but this man, what is he trying to do, do you think? Is he trying to reinforce his own rule by doing this?
To some extent, yes, although I think the evidence suggests the last few months Kim Jong-un has solidified his position and strengthened his hand over control over the 3 main institutions of government in North Korea, the party, state apparatus, and the military. And so suggestions that this is all designed to shore up his position vis-a-vis some of those other actors, in particular the military, I think should be taken with a pinch of salt. Just as important is the attempt not so much to solidify his political position, bind the country closer together in the face of a putative foreign threat. It's also, I think, an attempt to try and force the United States to sit down and have direct discussions with North Korea, not merely about the nuclear issue, but about a range of other issues encompassing conventional forces, possible peace treaty on the Korean Peninsula, and giving North Korea not just economic assistance, but some of the political recognition the Korean government has long craved.
You were talking about him solidifying his position. Is it him that really holds the reins, or is it the powers that be? Is it the army that holds the reins and he's just the figurehead, as it were?
No, I think the evidence does suggest that he is increasingly in the driving seat, and therefore we shouldn't see it as functioning in the way that traditional political institutions operate, checks and balances and competing centers of power. That having been said, there was an effort a few months ago by the leadership to, I think, weaken the power of the military. Some senior military officials, Ri Yong-ho, a very important marshal in the military, was removed from office very abruptly. Many people saw that as an effort by Kim Jong-un to strengthen his position. And for now, at least, I think, judging from his body language, we've seen in the photographs of him on-the-spot inspections, patrolling and looking at his military forces, a young, admittedly inexperienced 29-year-old leader, but one who shows a great deal of confidence and a type of showmanship and a delight of being in the public spotlight, both at home and abroad.
You're on the ground in South Korea, and of course, Kim Jong-un himself called on people, foreign nationals, to leave the country. What's the atmosphere on the ground, and what's the fear factor on the ground in South Korea?
Fear factor is virtually negligible, I would say. There have been a handful of foreigners who've taken this advice seriously and left the country, but the majority of people, I think, see this as just more of the same, really, the type of rhetorical posturing that the North is well known for, cycle of provocation that it's engaged on in the past. Although the intensity of this crisis and the speed and frequency with which the North has delivered these types of warning feels a little different, for ordinary North Koreans, this has largely been something that they've discounted. They've had to live with it for the best part of 60 years. And I think they recognize that, you know, rationally, this makes no sense. It makes no sense that they actually contemplated an attack. So ordinary South Koreans are going about their business calmly. Government, by contrast, has to take the threat of a military attack seriously, if only because it needs to reinforce its own deterrent posture alongside the United States, precisely to prevent them believing that they could get away with any sort of provocation, however small. And there's, therefore, I think, a noticeable difference between those two constituencies. At the same time, the South Korean government keen to maintain itself an unalarmist position, not to be rattled by the North Koreans, not to respond in a disproportionate way. And so we've seen President Park, the new, recently appointed conservative leader of the country here, trying, I think, to tread a fine line between, on the one hand, sending a clear signal that deterrence will work, and at the same time, not overreacting.
We've heard Ban Ki-moon talk about this situation. He's, of course, a South Korean national. And we have the G8 foreign ministers meeting going on. What do you think the international community can do? What do you think could be on the table regarding North Korea?
I think the international community, and I think particularly the United States and its South Korean ally, will want to, in a sense, play a waiting game. The door, from their perspective, is open for North Korea to step through to participate in further talks. And Washington and Seoul are very concerned not to appear to reward North Korea for its bad behavior. There are others like Ban Ki-moon, I think, who see the risk of miscalculation providing a powerful incentive for talks to take place. And it may be the case that the Secretary General believes that he himself might have a role to play. Some in South Korea, particularly amongst opposition politicians, have argued for just that. But for now, I think Washington would like to retain control, I think, over the way this event plays out. I don't think we're going to see any pressure coming out of the G8 talks for new direct negotiations.